Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
City of Midland Utilities hosting a job fair. The City of Midland Utilities Department will host a job fair from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. February 7th at the water plant at 5000 North Midland Drive. Stop by and have a hot dog and learn more about working for the City of Midland Utilities Department. On-the-spot interviews and offers will be made for qualified applicants for the following positions for full-time and shift work: Utility Plant Operator, Water Reclamation Facility, Water Plant Technician, Water Purification Plant, Equipment Operator, Water and Wastewater Maintenance, Electronic Tech, Chief Operator, Water Reclamation Facility, Maintenance Tech, Water Purification Plant. Most positions require a GED or high school diploma. The City of Midland offers competitive pay, room for growth, and an excellent benefits package. If you can't make it to the job fair, you can apply online at www.midlandtexas.gov. CPSC urges vigilance during winter storm. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission is warning consumers in the path of severe winter storms to take steps to protect themselves from carbon monoxide poisoning and fires, a press release stated. The storms are bringing below freezing temperatures, dangerous wind chills, snow and ice that can lead to power outages and use of portable generators. Consumers need to be especially careful when storms knock out electrical power. Portable generators create a risk of CO poisoning that can kill in minutes. CO is called the invisible killer because it is colorless and odorless. Exposed persons may become unconscious before experiencing CO poisoning symptoms of nausea, dizziness, or weakness, and it can lead to death. An average of 85 consumers die in the U.S. each year from CO poisoning from portable generators. A recent CPSC report, Fatal Incidents Associated with Non-Fire Carbon Monoxide Poisoning from Engine-Driven Generators and Other Engine-Driven Tools, 2011 through 2021, shows that African Americans are at higher risk, accounting for 23% of generator-related CO deaths, nearly double their estimated 12% share of the U.S. population in that time frame. In the case of a power outage, follow these important life-saving tips. Never operate a portable generator inside a home, garage, basement, crawl space, or shed. Opening doors or windows will not provide enough ventilation to prevent the buildup of lethal levels of CO. Operate portable generators outside only, at least 20 feet away from the house, and direct the generator's exhaust away from the home and any other building that someone could enter, while keeping windows and other openings closed in the path of the generator's exhaust. Do not operate a generator on an outside porch or in a carport. They are too close to the home. Check that portable generators have been maintained properly and read and follow the labels, instructions, and warnings on the generator and in the owner's manual. Look for portable generators that have a CO shutoff safety feature, which is designed to shut the generator off automatically when high levels of CO are present around the generator. These models may be advertised as certified to the latest safety standards for portable generators, PGMA G300 2018 and UL 2201, which are estimated to reduce deaths from CO poisoning by 87% and 100% respectively. UL 2001 certified models have reduced CO emissions in addition to the CO shutoff feature. Check CO and smoke alarms. Working smoke and CO alarms save lives. Install battery-operated CO alarms or CO alarms with battery backup on each level and outside separate sleeping areas at home. Interconnected CO alarms are best. When one sounds, they all sound. Make sure smoke alarms are installed on every level and inside each bedroom at home. Test CO and smoke alarms monthly to make sure they are working properly and replace batteries if needed. Never ignore an alarm when it sounds. Get outside immediately, then call 911. Clear snow away from the outside vents for fuel-burning appliances such as furnaces so that dangerous carbon monoxide does not build up in the house. Dangers with portable heaters. Keep all sides of the portable heater at least 3 feet from bed, clothes, curtains, papers, sofas, and other items that can catch fire. Always use a wall outlet, never a power strip, and never run the heater's cord under rugs or carpeting. Make sure the heater is not near water. Never touch if you are wet. Place the heater on a stable, level surface located where it will not be knocked over. Never leave running unattended in a confined space to reduce hypothermia hazards. If the heater's cord or plug is hot, disconnect the heater and contact an authorized repair person. If any part of the outlet is hot, contact a certified electrician. Dangers from charcoal and candles. Never use charcoal indoors. Burning charcoal in an enclosed space can produce lethal levels of CO. Do not cook on a charcoal grill in a garage, even with the door open. Use caution when burning candles. Use flashlights instead. If using candles, do not burn them on or near anything that can catch fire. Never leave burning candles unattended. Extinguish candles when leaving the room and before sleeping. Dangers with gas leaks. If you smell or hear gas leaking, leave your home immediately and contact local gas authorities from outside the home. Do not operate any electronics such as lights or phones before leaving. Today's obituary for February 2nd. Richard Dick Laverne Brooks died in Dallas on January 13th. Dick was born in Mountain View, Oklahoma on May 27th, 1925. He was the seventh child of eight born to Leslie, Tom, and Minnie Brooks. Called Gramps by his grandsons and Minnie, Dick spent his early years of retirement with his family, tending to trees at Monahan Straw and teaching Sunday school at Ashbury Methodist Church. He is survived by Rick and Terry, grandson Aaron and wife Sarah and their children, Chase and Colton, and several nieces and nephews. The family is grateful to Medical City Hospice and Brookdale Senior Living, White Rock Trail, Dallas, for their loving care of Dick during his last years. In honor of Dick's request to donate his body to research, a memorial service is pending. Interment will take place at a future date in Dallas-Fort Worth National Cemetery. Death notices. Harry Lynn Herring, 72, of Odessa, died Thursday, January 26th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Saturday, February 4th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Pastor Mike Bartlett is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ellen Barker Lutz, 58, died Saturday, January 21st in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Frank Reyes Pancho Rodriguez, 79, of Odessa, died Friday, January 27th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, February 4th at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Burial follows at Sunset Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Father Joseph Euchre is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Cancer rates. Nearly 2 million cancer diagnoses predicted for 2023. Nearly 2 million Americans, 1,958,310 to be exact, are expected to be diagnosed with cancer this year, and 609,820 people will die of the disease, the American Cancer Society says. The projected number of deaths would represent a 33% drop in the cancer mortality rate since 1991, and 3.8 million deaths averted. according to the organization's annual report on cancer trends and statistics, published in CAA, Cancer Journal for Clinicians. The reduction includes a 65% drop in the past decade in cervical cancer rates in women in their early 20s, which the report attributes to the introduction of the human papillomavirus vaccine. Conversely, prostate cancer rates have been rising by 3% a year, following two decades of decline and led by an increased diagnosis of advanced disease, which makes successful treatment less likely. Using data from cancer registries and the National Center for Health Statistics, the report, the overall decline in cancer deaths to more widespread screening, advances in treatments for some types of cancer, and behavioral changes, such as less tobacco. Cancer is the second most common cause of death in the United States, exceeded only by heart disease. Anyone can develop cancer, but 88% of those in the United States diagnosed with cancer are 50 or older, and 57% are 65 or older, according to a consumer-oriented version of the report available on the American Cancer Society website. At least 42% of newly diagnosed cancers are, quote, potentially avoidable, end quote, through behavioral changes, screenings, vaccination, and infection treatment, the report says. Mayo Clinic Q&A. What to know about ear infections? Dear Mayo Clinic, my 4-year-old daughter already has had 3 ear infections this winter. When she isn't feeling well, our entire family is miserable. The pediatrician says she may continue to get more infections and it is just her body. Why do some kids get ear infections so easily? And is there anything I can do to prevent the infections and help her heal, feel better faster? Answer. Our ears are amazing organs. They help us hear and experience the world. They also help maintain balance. They are self-cleaning, and the outer part of the ear never stops growing. Yet, as your family has discovered, ear infections can cause pain and discomfort. Infections can occur in the middle ear, in the air-filled space behind the eardrum that contains the tiny vibrating bones of the ear. Middle ear infections, which are the most common ear infections, are caused by a bacterium or virus that infects fluid that builds up in the middle ear. Ear infections often are a direct result of a common cold, allergy, or other upper respiratory illness. Children are more susceptible to ear infections because of the size of their eustachian tubes. These are narrow channels inside the ears that allow drainage to the back of the nose and prevent fluid in the middle ear from building up. Children's eustachian tubes are shorter, narrower, and straighter than those of adults. These tubes can become inflamed or irritated, and then they don't drain appropriately. This results in middle ear fluid building up, which can lead to an ear infection. Some common signs of an ear infection in children include ear pain, especially when lying down, tugging or pulling on the ear, trouble sleeping, hearing difficulty, headache or fever, fluid drainage from the ear. The best treatment for an ear infection depends on many factors, including the age of the child and the severity of the symptoms. Most ear infections clear up on their own within a week without medical treatment. For many kids, it is recommended to use the wait-and-see approach before prescribing antibiotics for ear infections. For kids 2 and older, antibiotics are not recommended if they have mild inner ear pain in one or both ears for less than 48 hours and have a temperature of less than 102.2 Fahrenheit. Antibiotics may be beneficial for some kids with ear infections. Your healthcare team can explain the potential side effects and concerns about antibiotics creating strains of resistant disease. You can lessen your daughter's pain associated with ear infections by using a warm compress, topical numbing ear drops, and over-the-counter pain medications such as ibuprofen or acetaminophen. Ear infections sometimes are unavoidable, especially with small children. However, you can reduce your daughter's risk by using a hair dryer to dry out her ears after swimming or bathing, encouraging her to wash her hands often, avoid secondhand smoke, protecting her ears from loud noise by using earplugs. Don't use any object to clean out her ears. This can damage the inner ear or skin, lead to bacteria entering the ear canal, or cause pain. Recognizing the challenges with persistent ear infections, do speak with your daughter's primary care team or pediatrician if she continues to have frequent infections. Some children need ear tubes surgically placed to drain the fluid and prevent future infections. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, February 1st, 2023. Midland Memorial Nurse Elizabeth Monroy receives Daisy Award. Midland Health congratulates Daisy Award winner Elizabeth Monroy, who works in the pediatric unit at Midland Memorial Hospital, and was nominated for the prestigious Daisy Award by a patient's family who was powerfully impacted by the care received from Elizabeth. The family wrote the following: Elizabeth has been our day nurse for most of our stay at MMH. She is so calm and encouraging, something that we really needed to ease our anxiety. She is compassionate, gentle, and caring in everything she does. Our daughter loves playing with her when she comes in to check on her. Our whole stay, she has always ensured that not only our daughter is taken care of, but Mom and Dad are taken care of and comfortable too. She has watched her when I've gone to get food or coffee, and even kept her entertained while I got some rest. I was so tired I hadn't even heard her wake up. Even though she and all of the staff have been so busy, she never rushes off and always takes time to answer questions and explains things. And if she is unsure of an answer, she will find out. It has been challenging for our family to be separated during the holidays and scary dealing with an unfamiliar illness. But Elizabeth has eased our stay immensely. Her kindness, compassion, and love for kids shines through in all she does. We will forever be grateful for the care we receive from her. You are lucky to have such a gem of a person on staff. Thank you, Elizabeth. End quote. Midland Health stated that because of Elizabeth's compassionate and caring efforts, that her patient experienced a level of care that exemplifies the impact nurses have in creating an environment where patients and families feel at home. The DAISY Award is an international nursing recognition program created to honor nurses who provide extraordinary compassion and care. Midland Memorial Hospital, MMH, is one of more than 4,900 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing worldwide that recognizes their nurses with this prestigious award. Anyone in the facility can nominate a nurse, be it a patient or visitor, another nurse, physician, or any other staff member. Anyone who experiences or observes extraordinary compassionate care being provided by a nurse. Have you recently had an extraordinary experience with a nurse at Midland Memorial Hospital? Please submit a DAISY Award nomination at the following link: https://www.midlandhealth.org/main/daisy-award-nomination-form. Mayo Clinic Q&A. What is degenerative disc disease and how can it be treated? Dear Mayo Clinic, I've been struggling with back stiffness and pain for a long time, but it has gotten worse in the last few years. My doctor told me that I have degenerative disc disease. What exactly does that mean? Is it common, and what can I do to feel better? Answer. Degenerative disc disease is a common cause of back pain. Our spinal discs wear out with age and use. About 20% of all U.S. adults have some amount of degeneration by age 65. This increases to about 35% by 80. Everyone has a degree of degeneration with time. It may or may not worsen or cause symptoms. Progression can be stagnant, slow, or fast. Discs are the fluid-filled cushions between the bones in your spine. The disc is flexible, and it fills the space between the vertebrae and provides the necessary cushion to allow the spine to bend and flex fully without pain. Like airbags in a car, the discs prevent the vertebrae from hitting each other and act as shock absorbers. Degenerative disc disease is the result of multiple factors, some that can be controlled and others that cannot. Age and time increase the odds of developing degenerative disc disease. Women are more likely than men to develop degenerative disc disease. Carrying excess body weight increases your risk, as well as spine strain due to manual labor, poor posture, or heavy lifting. Your symptoms and pain depend on the progression of your disease. As degenerative disc disease begins, the spinal discs start to lose fluidity. They become dehydrated and are not as rubbery or soft. This leads to the discs shrinking and losing height. Often the discs that are low in the spine degenerate first. As degeneration progresses further, the discs dry out even more and may begin pushing on nerves. The person could develop a ruptured or bulging disc. Often people have a bulging or ruptured disc with no symptoms, but sometimes this can cause symptoms in one or both legs. A bulging disc happens when the outer layer of the disc, the annulus fibrosus, bulges into the spinal canal. A ruptured disc, sometimes called a herniated or slip disc, happens when the inner part of the disc, the nucleus pulposus, leaks out of the disc through a crack in the annulus fibrosus. If a disc continues to degrade, it can result in a complete loss of the disc. Then, the person only has an air-filled space between the vertebrae, where the bones of two vertebral bodies directly contact each other. If your condition progresses to this level, you likely will have severe pain, significant stiffness, and possibly nerve compression. There are many treatment options for degenerative disc disease. Non-surgical treatments are important throughout the continuum. Weight loss can be extremely beneficial, along with decreasing the manual labor on the spine. Injections, medications, physical therapy, and strengthening your core can ease symptoms. It is important to work with a spine center that can offer various options for treatment. Surgery is only an option after non-surgical treatments are first exhausted. Surgery is considered if the condition is causing symptoms of nerve compression, and these symptoms are progressing despite physical therapy, medications, and injections. Symptoms from nerve compression may include pain, numbness, or weakness that radiates into a limb. Surgical options for degenerative disc disease include decompression surgery, such as laminectomy or discectomy, which creates space for the compressed nerves by removing part of the vertebrae bone or damaged part of the disc. Relieving pressure on the spinal cord or nerves can ease symptoms. Stabilization surgery, such as spinal fusion, which improves stability by permanently connecting two or more vertebrae in the spine. It may be performed after a decompression surgery for certain surgical indications of the spine. Disc replacement surgery, which replaces a worn-out disc with an artificial disc. Replacing a disc may help relieve pain in your arms or legs while maintaining motion and flexibility. Talk with your healthcare team about your back pain and ask them to tailor a treatment plan based on your personal goals and the level of your disc progression. Mayo Clinic Minute. Know the signs of coronary artery disease. Coronary artery disease is the most common type of heart disease, diagnosed in more than 20 million people and responsible for more than 350,000 deaths in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Regis Fernandez, a Mayo Clinic cardiologist, explains the signs of coronary artery disease and how to reduce your risk. When cholesterol builds up in the arteries that supply blood to the heart, hardening and narrowing the path, it's known as coronary artery disease. The most common symptom is chest discomfort. Quote, it lasts a few minutes or several minutes and is felt by patients. They describe that discomfort as a pressure, end quote, says Dr. Fernandez. Chronic discomfort that comes from decreased blood flow is called angina and is typically felt when a person exerts themselves. If the pain is new or gets worse, seek medical help right away. Over time, coronary artery disease can weaken the heart muscle and lead to heart failure. How can you reduce your risk of coronary artery disease? Quote, eating properly, exercising, having good health habits, end quote, says Dr. Fernandez. Genetics can also be a risk factor for coronary artery disease. Quote, it's important to know your cholesterol levels, particularly in individuals that have a strong family history of heart disease, end quote, says Dr. Fernandez. Quote, even though they are healthy and they are practicing healthy habits, because it can also come in a genetic form, end quote.
Objections by women to receiving statin drugs. Dear Dr. Roach, for 10 years, my daughter has refused statins due to cholesterol level on grounds that women were not a part of the studies recommending statins and that heart disease manifests differently in women. Her daily eating and exercise are stellar. After a decade, her female internal medicine doctor confessed that she too doesn't take statins for the same reason, although she feels it necessary to prescribe them to patients whose cholesterol warrants it. Is it fear of a lawsuit, or does the continuing education of all doctors come from Big Pharma? I have no family history of heart disease. Both parents lived into their 90s, but my cholesterol level warranted seeing a cardiologist. He says at my age, 84, family history doesn't apply, and my cholesterol warrants taking a statin. It makes no sense to pay this doctor and not take his advice, but every day that I swallow 20 milligrams of atorvastatin, I wonder if it's going to cause a problem rather than solve one. Can you address the gender objection to statins? CDC. Answer. Women have different hearts from men and often have different symptoms of heart disease, so it makes sense to consider whether the same drug effective in men isn't effective in women. It is certainly true that women are prescribed statins less than men are, but whether that is because women are being undertreated has been the subject of debate. Historically, women have been underrepresented in studies on heart disease. Of 27 trials looking at effectiveness of statins in treating and preventing heart disease, only 27% of the subjects have been women. However, that still means that almost 50,000 women were studied, and statins were found to reduce relative risk just as effectively in women as they do in men. However, because women have a lower absolute risk than men do, it has been harder to prove effectiveness until a 2015 study looked specifically at this issue. I don't have enough information to say whether you or your daughter are appropriate for statin therapy. Age and sex, blood pressure and cholesterol numbers, smoking history, diabetes, and other risk factors, including diet and exercise, all go into the estimate of a woman's risk of heart disease.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 2nd. Widow finds happiness with high school sweetheart. Dear Abby, my husband of 37 years passed away 4 months ago. When we were first married, we were happy, but his drinking increased, and he turned into a miserable, mean drunk. When I decided I'd finally had enough, he got sick and could no longer work, and I felt obligated to take care of him. More than a decade of my life was spent looking after him, for which he rarely, if ever, expressed appreciation. 1 month after his funeral, I was contacted out of the blue by my high school sweetheart. I was reluctant to respond at first, but I decided it couldn't hurt to meet him and enjoy dinner and conversation. The attraction was immediate. It felt like we were back in high school. It has been 3 months now, and we are ready to take our relationship to the next level. He makes me feel better than I have ever felt in my life. My children know how miserable I was for decades in my marriage, but I'm still concerned about how they will feel about me seriously dating so soon after becoming a widow. Signed, Longing for Love in the Midwest. Dear Longing, if you explain to your adult children that you and your friend from long ago have reconnected, they shouldn't react badly to the news. However, a word of caution. This is still a budding relationship. If by taking the relationship to the next level you mean becoming intimate, you are an adult long past the age of consent. However, if it means dashing off to marry this person, take more time before making a formal commitment. Doing that will enable you to observe how he reacts in a variety of situations, including whether you agree on issues you feel are important, as well as how he reacts when he's frustrated or angry. Dear Abby, I am a 55-year-old woman who had a few good jobs earlier in my career, which enabled me to buy a lovely townhouse in New England. I now work as a consultant, and I no longer earn the same kind of money I did back then. My problem, about 20 years ago, my parents borrowed money from me to fix their home so they could sell it. After it sold, not only did they not pay me back, but they moved in with me. It was supposed to be temporary, but they have been staying here rent-free for the last 5 years. In addition to my frustration with my parents, my sister, who is in her 40s, was living down south with her boyfriend when their relationship imploded. So she moved back to New England and moved in with us. She is not paying rent either and brought her two dogs with her. I am at my wit's end. Please give me some advice. Signed, Going Bonkers in Massachusetts. Dear Going Bonkers, you have been patient and tolerant for far too long. You have been a pushover. Contact an attorney for help, because you may have to evict these relatives. Grow a backbone and tell your parents you want them not only to move, but to take your sister and her dogs with them. I sincerely hope you have something in writing memorializing the loan you gave your folks, because if you don't, you probably will not see that money again. Sorry.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.